I had two losses in May of this year, a dear friend and beloved family dog. I continue to feel these losses deeply. How does one know the difference between appropriate grieving and honoring the memory of a beloved versus clinging and attachment? Thank you very much. Well, the result of clinging and attachment is suffering. So that at any point or in any experience that we are feeling discomfort, dis-ease, a sense of say a kind of like a overwhelming sadness as opposed to like a poignancy, because that's there's a there is because you know part of because it isn't as if you don't acknowledge or recognize loss. I mean, loss hurts, and when we've had a connection with beings that we feel a sense of connection with, then there is a missing of that. But it's also if it goes in, because oftentimes it's the sense of loss is usually because it's personalized. It's sort of it's my loss, my friend, my family member, my, and it's not that it's not, and you and just to sort of, oh, there's a switch there that you turn that off. That's not how it works. And the or that somehow just because you've been practicing Dhamma, you don't feel anything. But it's starting to again recognize understanding process, really investigating, so that there's a poignancy and a kind of like a kind of sadness that one experiences, but it's not personalized. It's sort of it has a it's a motivating force for increased commitment to practicing Dhamma. That sense of point and the I mean there's a word in the Pali which is the say Sangveka, which is like that sadness that is a tinge with a sense of urgency. So there's a sense of urgency, like this is the nature of all conditioned things is to is separation and loss. And I got to do something about this. But if it gets really frantic, then that's suffering. But it can really nurture a commitment to practice, commitment to good spiritual friendships, commitment to the path. And that's really, really important. So to be letting it in. And of course it isn't as if one yeah all of, again there's we learn these things only by going through them and as we start to recognize and feel loss then it it because it can be such a motivating force for nurturing the sense of commitment to what's truly good, what's And I think what comes to mind is say Ajahn Chah. I had the good fortune of meeting Ajahn Chah when I was fairly young. I had a tremendous commitment to him as a teacher, and he actually led a pretty short life. His teaching career was over when he was about 61, 62. You know, all that he accomplished was done before then. And then subsequent to that, he was bedridden, incapable of speech and unable to help himself for the next 9 or 10 years. But I'd say my grieving for Ajahn Chah took place during that period of his illness, and getting used to the fact that he was okay. This is going in one direction only, and then when he died, there was a tremendous sadness, but not really grief. It was sort of okay that phase is over, and what can I do to honor his memory? What can I do to live up to what he taught and trained and set the example for? So that it's used in a way to nurture the wholesome and the skillful, whereas and it's encouraging and uplifting at the same time. But so often we will, the sort of like ordinary grief is sorrow, sadness, and at one's personal loss. And it's that personalization of experience that gets us into trouble over and over and over again in different ways, whether it's on whether it includes dying and separation or not. It's that personalization, identifying with experience, so that it's that. So clinging and attachment are those elements of identification and not wanting things to be the way they are. It shouldn't be this way. And I think of, again, sort of think of Ajahn Chah. I mean, I'm way past 62. and he had so much to contribute and contributed so much. They say it shouldn't be this way. Well, I can think that, but that's really stupid. Because it doesn't get anybody anywhere. So how do we deal with things as they truly are?